I was doing this project with Michael Jordan, and somebody saw him and walked up to us and said, "Oh my God, I was there that night against Cleveland when you hit that shot at the buzzer to eliminate them from the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. Great moment." And Jordan didn't say anything. And he said, "You don't remember your game-winning shots?" And Jordan said, "No, but I can tell you in excruciating slow-motion replay detail every time I had the ball at the end of the game and I missed the shot and we lost."
Welcome to the Action Academy Podcast.
Stand back while I celebrate freedom.
The show where we help you achieve financial independence with the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who've already earned their freedom.
The flags of freedom fly.
Choose to do what you want.
What you want.
With who you want.
With who you want.
When you want.
When you want.
With another episode today. Now, here's your host, Brian Lubin.
What's up, Action Academy family? This is your host, as always, Brian Lubin, bringing you the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps so that you can earn freedom in your life and business with this episode today. If today is your first dive into the Action Academy, feel free to go back and look. We have over 100 other episodes with entrepreneurs that are 7 to 9 figure. That is going to be $1 million to over $100 million in net worth and assets. These guys and girls have really done the work to earn their freedom. And that was the baseline for this show until today. Today, I am proud to present the first billionaire on the Action Academy podcast, and that is none other than Jeff Hoffman, founder of Priceline.com and Booking.com. So along with being the founder and CEO of Priceline.com, Jeff is also the chairman of the Global Entrepreneurship Network that works with entrepreneurs in 190 countries, as well as being a founding board member of the Unreasonable Group, whose 289 portfolio companies have raised $6.6 billion in funding and have positively impacted more than 720 million lives worldwide. This man is building charities and building villages in Africa and Uganda, doing huge things in television, has an Emmy Award-winning show, and he's a Grammy Award-winning jazz producer, because why not, I guess? So anyways, that is Jeff Hoffman, today's guest, the first billionaire on the Action Academy podcast. So maybe a little intimidating for some people listening, but bear with me. This is what we talk about today. I don't care if you are worth $100 or $100 million. Today's episode has got value for you. Jeff has the uncanny ability to be able to take very high-level concepts and break them down very simply for anybody to understand. It's not confusing at all, and he is a fantastic storyteller. So stay tuned and pay attention for the Ferrari story at about minute 15. In the beginning, we are going to talk about how to build a business, how to scale a business, mistakes that people make, how to do it the right way. And we go through some of Jeff's stories and lessons about how he did this. And in the back half, we're going to talk about wealth building practices, entrepreneurship in general, and how to just really grow massive levels of wealth in the right ways. Go through today's episode slow. Be sure to take times to pause and rewind and really digest what he's saying and take notes. He's going to motivate you. He's going to inspire you. He's going to give you a lot of billion-dollar wisdom. So stay tuned. If you are enjoying this content, go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, because I am not stopping. We have got a roster of guests coming to you in July. So you're going to want to stay up to date and stay tuned for all of these guests that are coming. And lastly, we are heading out tomorrow. We're hopping on our plane to Greece one way, July 6th on Wednesday. If you have not downloaded my free guide from W2 to World Travel that walks you through step-by-step how I did this financially, mentally, emotionally, go download the guide. It's at W2toWorldTravel.com, and the link is in the show description. So without any further ado, Mr. Jeff Hoffman. Mr. Hoffman. Fox News analyst. How are you, buddy?
I am good. How are you today?
I'm doing well. We were just talking a little bit off mic, off camera, about your appearance on Fox previous to this interview. You just hopped off of Fox and you hopped onto here. So talk a little bit about what the heck's going on with the travel and the pilot shortage here going into this 4th of July weekend.
Sure. So I had to do the national travel report because it's going to be horrible. The airlines are already telling people if you could reschedule your trip. You can't exactly reschedule July 4th, but they're literally telling people if you can go somewhere a different weekend, don't go this weekend. There's a shortage of pilots. There's a shortage of flight attendants, ramp workers. The towers, air traffic control towers, FAA has reported they are short-staffed. So they are predicting thousands of flight delays and cancellations for this weekend. It's just going to be a nightmare for a lot of people.
Ooh. So to answer your question, you just asked me what I'm about to do. I'm about to go travel from this day that we're recording. I'm 1 week away. So next Wednesday, me and my girlfriend get on a one-way flight, and we are flying to Greece for a month and then bouncing around from there. So the plan is Europe 3 months, Southeast Asia for 3 months, and then Brazil. So we're essentially...
That's amazing.
Yeah. So hopefully I'm not one of your statistics, man.
How did you pick... I'll tell you what. Here is what I actually just reported on the national news. Early in the morning, before 8 a.m., those flights get out, and after 7 p.m. So people that travel early in the morning or later at night are doing fine.
Okay.
So try to take a flight that's before 8 in the morning or after 7 in the evening, because they're not canceling those. They're getting the first flights out, but then all their staff, it gets bad in the middle of the day. So why Greece?
Greece was always on my bucket list. It was something that I've always just wanted to go to. And then I originally had a plan to go. And now I've essentially, over a couple of years, planned out this odyssey. And I know this is something near and dear to your heart, and I'm excited to hear about it from you, especially because you founded Booking.com, Priceline.com. This is your bread and butter. And you founded that because you wanted to build a company around your passion for traveling to 50 countries, right?
Yeah, we always tell people that a lot of times people separate a job is a thing you have to have so that you can pay your bills, and a passion is something you hope you have time to do someday. And the whole reason to become an entrepreneur is, why don't you make a job around the thing you're passionate about? Travel is my thing. I love traveling and exploring and visiting new cultures and new places, just like the Odyssey trip you're about to go on. At the time, I'm a broke 20-year-old. Who's going to pay for that? And so most of the time I got an engineering job, but I'm in my cubicle all day because I got to pay my bills. So I never have any time. I can't travel. I have a job. And so that's what led me to say, what if I just created a job where my job actually was to travel? My first business, Brian, was the check-in kiosks in airports. And when I created those, my job literally was to fly to different countries every week to sell them kiosks to put in their airport. So I got to pay my bills and have a job, but I also got to travel around the world because I had to go install these things and sell them everywhere. So that's the same way when we were, back at the beginning of Priceline.com, Booking.com, it was people that love travel, passionate about travel. And what if you just built a travel company? That company today does business in 190 countries. So you know what it takes to do business in 190 countries? People flying to all these countries to set it up. So that's a cool deal if you like traveling, to build a company that you have to travel to build.
Mm-hmm. So exactly. And then when you built this, you weren't like at that point where you pedigreed, that was your first company. You were in software IT, right? Before you began that.
Yeah. My training, I'm a software engineer. That's what my degree is, in writing software.
What was the transition like going from that into doing that job and you realizing that you hated it and that you were actually a marketing guy to saying, oh, okay, let's build a company around travel?
Well, Brian, that's actually a funny story because I am a software developer. That's what I got my degree in. And when I had my dream to visit 50 countries, and I had a little note card on my bathroom mirror to remind me of what I wanted to do. But every day I just went to my cubicle, wrote code, and went home. And I'd see that little card and I was like, I don't go anywhere. I go up to the fourth floor every day and then I go home. And I'm never going to travel. And it was definitely bothering me. That's all I did for a living. So when I left and started that first company, the idea was to build a kiosk that you check yourself in, right? Because back then you had to wait in line to check in. So I figured I could write the software. I brought some software people in, but we had no idea how to physically build the hardware, the actual kiosk that people use today. We had to get hardware people. But at a moment, I hired some programmers. We're all writing code. Right? The code to let you check into your own flight on a kiosk. And all of a sudden, I noticed no one else is working. They're all staring at me. And I'm like, guys, what's going on? And they look at this dude, Robert. And I said, Robert, what is going on? And they're like, yeah, we're going to need you to step away from the keyboard. And I was like, what? And Robert goes, "You're like the worst programmer here." I said, "Wait a minute, time out." I said, "This is my company. I hired you guys." And they said, "And somehow you suck at this." And I'm sitting there. My degree is software engineering. My job was a software engineer. And I said, "What degree do you guys have?" And they said, "Yeah, Jeff, we all have software degrees. We all have a degree in computer science." And they said, "But somehow we're all really good at this and you're not." Yeah. And I sat there. I was like, "What do you want me to do?" And they said, "Stop writing code. We're all way better at it than you." And I said, "Do what?" So I didn't know, Brian, until I hired rock stars. I didn't know that I was below average. I thought I was doing fine. Then I hired rock stars, which is part of my advice to everybody. Hire less people and spend your money on rock stars. Two rock stars will outperform eight average people. So people say, "I can't afford rock stars." Then don't hire all those other people. Spend the money on them. These guys were rock stars. And I realized I never was going to be able to develop, to do things they could do. But they did say to me, I said, "What do you guys want me to do in my own company?" They said, "The product's going to be done soon. None of us know marketing. Why don't you go figure out what that is?" And it turned out when I got into marketing, even though I had a software degree, but I did take, they didn't officially have a minor, but I basically had a minor almost in marketing because I took classes at the biz school while I was an undergrad. But anyway, I got into that. It turned out I was actually good at that in a way that I wasn't good at writing code. So I made my living marketing technology, not so much building it myself anymore. What was nice about the technical background, for anybody out there that has a tech company, you don't have to be the one building the tech, but it sure helps for me to understand when my tech team comes to me and I say, "What do we need to do?" And they explain it to me. I can pretty much understand it for that reason.
Sure. And then a story comes to mind from Jeff Bezos. He did an interview where he said that before he was going to college for like quantitative mathematics, and he's going to be a quant until one day he was with a roommate that was working on a problem that he'd been working on for like 6 months for his dissertation. And then he did it in 5 minutes and he realized, "Oh, hey, math isn't my thing." So I'm going to go into the leadership side. I want to keep hitting on this in a little bit, but I want to actually take a small pivot here because there's a story around the GoBundance community that keeps circling from what you've done on a keynote stage. And this has actually been from this last one. I'm not sure if you did it in Miami, but before actually about your resident frequency story.
Sure.
I want to hear about that because I think it applies.
Okay. The question that I didn't know I was answering then, but the question that answers this thing about balance, right? Because everybody that's a business owner or an entrepreneur knows this. It's super hard to balance everything. I once had an entrepreneur that came in to give me his pitch one day. And when we were leaving, when he was leaving, he said to me, "Can I borrow $40? I said, "Dude, you out of gas?" And he said, "No, it's not for gas." I said, "What do you need? I'm happy to loan you the money, but what do you need $40 for?" He said, "I've been working so much lately that my girlfriend said if I don't buy her dinner by Friday, she's done with me." And I laughed because we've all been there, right? It's hard to balance it all when you're an entrepreneur, taking care of your loved ones, being there for your friends, having time for physical activity, exercise, going to church, whatever moves you. It's hard when you're an entrepreneur to balance things. And so everybody always talks about balance. And I didn't have a good framework for thinking of it, but that's where that story is relevant. So I had made this childhood bet with myself about, really quick, Brian, what the story came from was when I was a kid, one of my friends bought a poster of a Ferrari and all my buddies were over there just like oohing and aahing over this poster. And I went home and asked my mom, "What's that big deal?" And my mom said, "What was the poster?" I said, "It was a Ferrari." I didn't know what a Ferrari was. I grew up in a poor single mom house. And she said, "Oh, the fascination is that it's the unattainable dream." And I was like, "Oh, I thought Ferraris were real." My mom's like, "Ferraris are real. It's just that neither you nor anyone you know will ever have one." And I was like, "Wait a minute. I thought it's a real car." And my mom's like, "Son, seriously." And she said, "I don't want you to have unrealistic expectations." And I was like, "Mom, does someone drive a Ferrari?" She said, "Yeah, a handful of people, relatively speaking, on all of Earth drive that car, but it ain't going to be you or anyone you know." And so back then, I remember thinking, that doesn't make sense. Somebody gets that drive. This isn't even about cars, Brian. I don't even want a Ferrari. What I wanted to understand was why everybody accepts that it's not going to be you. I didn't want to be told no. I didn't want the car. I just wanted to be able to buy it if I wanted. And so I said, my mom, it's never going to be you. She said, have you ever even seen one of these cars ever? I said, no, I've never seen one in real life. She said, you ain't going to drive one either. And so I went and bought the poster as a kid. And on the back of the poster, I wrote down this list of things I believed were true about the world, even though they were not what people was telling me. And I told myself then, if I am right and I can cross all 17 of these things off, the day I do that, I will go buy that car. I'm not a car guy. I don't even want the car. I just want to prove that it can be done, right? That you are the master of your destiny. You set your limits and your goals, not everybody else. That was the point. And so the point of the story is I eventually crossed the last thing off and I went and bought this race car. And I took the car out one day. I would go on Sunday drives and it's a race car. So it was like super loud. It had this like thick glass cockpit, you know, that when you get in the car. And I was decided one day, it was a Sunday morning, by the way, on 285 south of the city.
Yeah.
driving out. If you're, what area do you live in?
I'm in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay. But you in the city?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I was in Marietta. And I left there, got on 285. I was going south, actually down to visit one of my good friends in Atlanta all those years, was Evander Holyfield, the fighter. And Evander lives way south. So I got on 285 at 5 o'clock on a Sunday morning and there were no cars. Everyone's asleep. I was driving to Evander's house and I was like, man, there's no one on the road but me. And so obviously 285 around the perimeter. And I was like, I'm going to push it. And it's funny because the car has this switch to make it street legal. And so you can flip the switch that says race mode. And when you put it in racing mode, this little voice says, are you sure? And you have to click yes, because then it changes the torque and the suspension and it lets you drive a 200 mile an hour car. So I switch it to race mode and I take off. And I'm driving 70 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour, 90 miles. And the car's loud as hell. 100 miles an hour, then 110, then 120. And what's interesting is when I hit 130, the car went off. And I was like, oh no, I broke the car because it just went silent, but it didn't slow down. And I was like, what the hell is going on? So I kept pushing it. And then at 140, it was loud again. And 150, I went 168 before I chickened out. But at 130 miles an hour, the car was dead silent. And I was really like, what on earth was that about? So when I got home, I called the Ferrari people. And I told him the story. I said, at 130 miles an hour, why was my car silent? None of those noises. And they laughed. And the Ferrari guy said, because your car hit resonant frequency. And I said, what is resonant frequency? And he said, we designed the car to cruise at 130 miles an hour. That is the optimal speed to drive that car. So it was resonant frequency is when something is doing exactly what it was designed to do. And I was like, so that was he said, that's what the concept of resonant frequency is. So when I hung up the phone, I thought, man, resonant frequency. And I remember thinking to myself, wait, what's mine? What is my resonant frequency? And that's what I challenged the whole GoBundance community. When I do tell this story, what were you designed to do? Where were you designed? Where are you supposed to be in the world? So your resonant frequency is when you are in the place in the world you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. And what they said to me was every gear in that car, every nut and bolt was designed for that moment. And it was in perfect harmony. And I was like, dang, I got to figure out mine. So I went home and I wrote resonant frequency. I write stuff on the wall and stare at it. And I was like, I got to figure out what would make every gear in my life hum. What would be the place where I look around and say, this is exactly where I'm supposed to be. And I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing in the world. And how do you get to resonant frequency? And that's that sort of balance in the world where you look around and you're like, yeah, this is what I was shooting for. And so I asked myself this question. What are the gears of my engine for everybody listening to us today? What are the gears of the engine of your life? And so I started writing them down, right? Instead of pistons and valves, I wrote down your relationship with your parents is one. If you're in a big fight with your mom, you're not at resonant frequency, right? Something's bothering you. Your friends, right? Your personal relationship, boyfriend, girlfriend, spouse, whatever. Financial health is one. If you're broke and stressed over bills, you're not at resonant frequency. Physical health is one. You have a lot of money, but you're sick all the time. You're not enjoying it. Spiritual health, right? Emotional health. I wrote a list on the wall of all the gears of my engine. What are all the things that if all those gears are doing okay, forget perfection. That's a myth. But doing pretty good is good enough. Then I wrote them all down and I decided to use stoplight colors, red, yellow, green. And so I've had them all on the wall next to me on the whiteboard. And I would look at them and I'd ask myself, I do this every Friday. And wow. I would say, how am I doing? How did this week end? And for example, financial might be green. I'm fine. I'm not stressed about money right now. But parents, that one was red because I had a big fight with my mom. And honestly, I was a jerk and I need to call her and apologize. And I haven't yet. And I haven't seen my friends in too long. I said no to the last two birthday parties and I didn't show up. And that one's yellow because they're going to get pretty annoyed at me. And so I would every Friday, I would look at my resonant frequency list and I would make decisions. I got to go see my mom this weekend. I got to call my friends and go have dinner with them next week. Or it might be you're young and newly married and you're about to have a kid and you need a bigger place. You need a home instead of an apartment. I'm just making it up. So mm-hmm. I got to go make money right now. Mm-hmm. So at different times, you achieve that resonant frequency by constantly. It's no different than looking at the dashboard of a car. Or if you think of a pilot, the cockpit of a plane, you're looking at all those gauges and you're attending to the one that's out of line. And when that one's fixed, everything's humming along and eventually you lose a little altitude. So you got to fix that one. That's how life works. But it's easier to achieve resonant frequency if you are actually conscious of the gears of your life and asking yourself, are they okay? How am I doing? And so that you look at it and say, look, I know in my heart, I got to go talk to my mom this week. And that's priority one. I'll worry about the other ones next week. So that was the resonant frequency story. Woo. And it really helped me look at how I'm managing my life. But until I had that visual from the cockpit of a car, I never had that tool set before.
Wow. So I will actually. Yeah. So, Jeff, we completely forgot to record. We got to do that. We got to run it back, buddy. No, it was. I will give Kelly, if you're listening to this. Holy crap. So he told the story. We were sitting in San Diego. I just went and did a bucket list trip where I rented a convertible and drove from San Francisco down the PCH down to San Diego.
Nice. It's a great drive.
Yeah. And my friend Kelly is in Go Abundance. He said, dude, this guy, Jeff, has this story. It's called Resonant Frequency. And he told the story to the point where I had goosebumps. And I was like, one day I'm going to talk to Jeff and I'm going to ask him that story and I'm going to see if he can top that because the way that goes. So Kelly, shout out to you, bud, because you told that story really well, but hey, obviously you can't step up on the person that's the originator, man. Goosebumps once again. And for everyone listening, Ryan, holy crap.
Thanks, Kelly. I obviously love the GoBundance community.
That's amazing. So speaking, let's use that as a slight pivot here. So speaking of resonant frequency, let's talk about one of the struggles of CEOs, especially early on. You have a quote where it says that CEOs need to stay in their lane. And to your example before, you were marketing. You needed to surrender the rest of the business and all sure. the software and IT to all the other people. One person is not the best at seven things. You need to find your lane. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I struggle with that, and I know thousands of other people struggle.
Yeah. You know what, Brian? What's interesting is one of the worst things that happens to leaders is success. You start a company, and at the beginning, it's only you and maybe a co-founder. So you're wearing seven hats. You do marketing, product development, HR. You're doing finance, paying the bills, and it's going well. So you're like, I'm pretty good at this stuff. And that's the big myth. The question I'm usually answering is because we were blessed enough to have companies that went from little to global. And so people say, how did you guys scale these businesses? And the answer I always have to tell them is real success happened when you let go, when you realize that you were never as smart as you think you are. And in fact, you're actually only as, because people tell me, actually, I wear all those hats. I do all those things today. My business is going great. But the question is the leap. And that's great. Congratulations. You have a great business, but that's not the question you're asking me. You're asking me is how do you get to that next level, right? The big jump. And that's where what got you here won't get you there. The style of thinking. That's what people miss. They're like, man, I'm crushing it. But I'm still not really at that big level. And that doesn't happen until you can't scale until you can let go. And you can't let go until you surround yourself with people smarter than you. And you can't surround yourself with people smarter than you until you admit that every one of us is really only good at one thing, right? Ryan, I have never hired an engineer to write code who said, by the way, I'll do all the company's taxes, balance the books, and write all our marketing copy while I'm engineering. It doesn't happen.
Not as well. But that's, people try to do that with their virtual assistants, though. They're like, oh, I want to hire a virtual assistant and have her run my entire business.
Lawyers do law, right? Dentists work on your... And so in business, the fact that just because you're the founder or the CEO that you think you can do all these things is just a myth. And it's preventing people from growing. And so when I realized I was... Marketing was the one thing I could do. I didn't really start to grow until I said, I'm going to hire people smarter than me in every other area. I will probably run the marketing meetings, but I won't run anything else. I will step aside and let people smarter than me do all the things that I'm not good at. Figure out what your lane is. Be honest. I told you, I thought I was a developer until I hired rock stars and they said, please stop writing code. You're killing us. But when I started doing marketing, that's when I realized I'm actually really good at this. And so if it's a marketing meeting, I'm running it. But if it's operations, customer service, finance, I got people smarter than me. And if you were to ask me what's going on in there, I'd say, I don't know, go ask Angela. And they'd be like, dude, you own the company. And I would say, yes. And I'm smart enough to know that Angela is way better at this than me. That's why I hired her. If you have a question, ask her, not me. And I had people... A lot of CEOs will be able to relate to this. I had people that said, Jeff, you're the CEO. You own the company. You should know everything that's going on in that company. And because a lot of people think that. In fact, Brian, once somebody convinced me of that early on, because I was looking at these cash flow statements that my CFO, and he said, you understand all that? I said, just the basics, not really. He's like, that's horrible. It's your company. You own it. You better understand everything everyone does. So I went to the bookstore and I bought a book called Finance and Accounting for Non-Finance People for Dummies. And I was like all excited. And I went home and I was going to read this book and teach myself finance as a marketing guy or whatever. And I opened it to page one and I remember thinking, this is one of the stupidest ideas I've ever had. I actually joked and I told one of my friends, I'm going to buy a book called Home Dentistry and I'm just going to start pulling my own teeth. And he's like, you are? I was like, hell no, I'm going to go to a dentist. So why would I think I'm suddenly going to be a finance guy when there's people who do it for a living? I'll just get one of them. And so that realization, there's surround yourself with people smarter than you. Figure out the one thing you're good at. Go do that and let the other people let go of the other pieces. We grew when I let go. When I said, you guys are smarter than me. You don't need to ask me anything. In fact, if you don't think I'm going to understand, you don't even have to explain it all. So when I told people no, as a matter of fact, I do not understand everything that goes on in finance. I'm not a finance major, but I do own the company. I am the CEO, and that's okay, but I don't understand. I still go to a dentist, and I don't know exactly how they do what they do because people would tell me, you have to know that. You don't. You have to be smart enough to hire people smarter than you and let them do their job. And if you can't trust them, then spend more time finding them. You got to find rock stars. That takes work. And people were like, one last thing, Brian, I was sitting in a room with a bunch of customers and my lawyer came in. He said, are you flying out of town today? I said, after this meeting. He said, then I need you to sign this contract because I need it this week. And he put it in front of me and I signed it. And I looked up and the customers are all like making the O mouth surprise. And I said, what? And they said, you just signed that. And they said, Jeff, that wasn't a contract. It was a blank sheet of paper. I said, whatever. So what do you mean, whatever? You signed a blank sheet of paper. And I said, well, I'm sure it'll be a contract by tomorrow. And they're like, how can you sign a blank sheet of paper? I said, wait, I know what's going on here. You're saying that I shouldn't sign a blank sheet of paper for trust reasons. I don't know what he's going to do with my signature. What's he going to put? All that's based on trust. I said, because instead of distrusting people, why don't you put all your effort into finding people you trust? I said, that guy right there, if I was on my deathbed and someone said, who do you want to make these decisions? That's probably the guy I'd call. I literally trust him with my life. What I did was I invested a ton of time to find Glenn. And if you're asking me, would I sign a blank sheet of paper for that guy any day? Because that's a guy I would want next to me in my deathbed. So instead of the default position being you're the boss, you're the owner, trust no one, do it all yourself. Mine's the opposite. Hire people that you believe in so much that you would sign a blank sheet of paper for them and that would never go wrong. And it never did. I had people that came with me for four different companies because they were amazing people and smarter than me.
So to that point, Jeff, on the reverse, you see a lot of horror stories. So I feel like this is what makes your business a shooting star or makes you another case study in a Harvard Review, right? It's like the same thing, but in the reverse, where people are like, oh yeah, I hired this guy, thought I could have bet my life savings that I was going to make it through till 90 years old with this guy. And he completely jacked me out of all my money. So a question that I have is, when you're talking about hiring rock stars, I want to hit on this so hard, is do you look for a fully developed rock star that is technically proficient in whatever field you're specifically trying to fill?
Right,
and then
right.
Just pay the money to hire that person? Or do you find the person that has the intangible trustworthiness and the soft stuff that you're like, I can have this guy, I can sign a blank sheet of paper for this guy and then develop that person into the rock star?
Okay, that is an absolutely wonderful question. Two parts to that answer. First of all, we never hire a resume. We hired a culture, which means values. We have so for everybody listening, if your culture is not written on the wall where you work, even if you are a solopreneur, I'm redoing the board behind me, but that was filled with my values and the things I believe in. The whiteboard in my office behind me, even though it's not now because we're redoing it. Your values should be written where you see them every day. And everybody that works at your company should be reminded every time they glance over at the wall of what we stand for here and what we believe in. Culture is way more important than resume. So we hire people that are our tribe, people that we believe in, and people that match our culture. The reason why is I can teach you skills, but I can't change your DNA. You could go to school and learn marketing or coding or customer service, but you really can't go to school and learn how to be a decent human being. You aren't. I'm not saying you can't improve, but your fundamental DNA and your value system, that's a way harder to change than it is to teach you new skills. So we hire to our culture, which is our strongly held values. Now, to your point, finding talent, finding rock stars is work, right?
Yeah.
I always give this talk, and I think I mentioned it at the last GoBundance thing in Miami, that I would schedule days to leave my office and I'm going to go out in the world and hunt for talent. I'm going to go out and meet people and look for them. Talent, finding rock stars takes work. So the second part of my answer to your question is, the best case is when you find both. Somebody, sure. The story I usually tell about is about this woman, Angela, who was a rock star HR person, but totally our value set. But she happened to be already very accomplished in HR. And she ran HR for four companies for me. She stayed with me for a long time. She was already good at it. So the best thing to do is put a lot of time into hire hard and manage easy. Put a lot of time into hoping that you can find a rock star that's already domain proficient, but matches your values. But if you can't, and I have to choose between the two things you said, I would not hire the amazingly proficient domain expert that doesn't match my values. I would hire the rookie that is totally aligned with our values, that isn't yet the rock star they're going to be someday. Mm. So if I have to choose, but in reality, what I really did was just look harder and longer until I could find those people. So I was lucky enough to find people with some of the people that really already had those rock star skills and matched our values.
To that point, it makes me think, when you're thinking of like your reticular activating system, right? Like you buy a new car, you see the new car everywhere. People talk a lot about, oh, I want rock stars. I want rock stars. I want rock stars for my business. But I feel like they don't have a specifically designed definition of what a rock star is. And so I think that you saying that in the way that you just said it, where you were, your rock star was a person that has the culture. You are also looking for the cultural aspects for your rock star. So maybe that made it a little easier. Is that one of the ways that people fall off kilter? Like one of the reasons that people aren't able to get the rock stars is they think that they're searching for this person, but they've got the definition just asked backwards?
Yeah, I think you're right. Just to expand on what you said, one of the most important skills you can ever develop as a leader, as a human being, is learning how to ask the right questions in life. So
start a podcast.
kind of literally what you just said there, because you're going to find what you were looking for. To your point about your reticular system, you're going to find what you're looking for. So knowing how to ask the right questions and how to look is a huge thing, right? So I actually have examples of little things that I look for that already start to give me clues. Like one of our core values is treating all human beings with the same level of dignity and respect. There's no way around that. I fired a guy that was my best salesman. So he was his sales were three times more than anybody else in the company. Best Wow. salesman I ever had, a guy named Paul. And I fired him anyway. And he said, I outsell everyone in this company by a factor of 3 to 1. No way are you really firing me. I said, you do outsell everybody here by a factor of 3 to 1, but you also out-asshole them 10 to 1, so you're gone. I said, you're an unbelievable salesman, but you're an even more unbelievable asshole. And the reason why was I overheard him yelling at our receptionist. I told you I want coffee. I was like, wait, I was standing behind him. He didn't know that. So when I gave him that example, he said, who, the receptionist? I repeated her name. And he was silent. I said, you didn't even know her name? He said, Jeff, I'm the vice president. She's the receptionist. I was like, you're already done at this company. Just Wow. the fact that you said that. So here's the equivalent. Let's say I'm doing an interview and I'm meeting somebody for lunch. You already know something by the way they react when the waitress comes to the table.
Yes.
If they see the waitress as part of the restaurant and not a human being, I'm already less interested. Or more, I'd rather go the positive than the negative. If the waitress comes up and they say, what's your name? How long have you worked here? And they're asking questions and treating that person like they're an actual important human being that might have kids of their own and a life of their own. Mm-hmm. They don't just exist for this moment to serve you in a restaurant. I'm already learned something about you as a human being. So the things you are watching for, you were right on, Brian. The things that you are watching for are the things you're going to find, mm-hmm. right? Just like the same way employees react to the things they know you're actually measuring. If they think you're measuring one thing, that's the one they're working on. So, yeah, you're dead on about that. I've learned over a lot of gray hair, even though it's all in my beard now, the rest of it left, what kinds of indicative things to pay attention to that enabled me to spot rock stars when before, early on, I was asking questions that were just the wrong questions. And that's sure. why people are frustrated. I can't find the right people because you were looking at the wrong thing.
Is that a process that's developed? Obviously, it's a process that's developed over time, trial and error, just like you trying to be a software developer. And then you're like, oh, hell, this isn't me. Is there any advice that you can give? There, obviously, we can never find shortcuts, but we can find efficiencies. Is there any kind of resource or any kind of advice you can give to people that are in that fledgling position in their company? And they're trying really hard to define what a rockstar is, or be like, what to measure in their company. So is there any advice that you can give to somebody that can help them accelerate that journey? Or is that just something that you have to learn through the school of hard knocks in business?
No, it's both. Clearly sure. you get better at it over time. But yeah, the one of the things that I did learn, and it's funny because Paul, the guy that I told you about, was great at sales. He just wasn't a great guy. But the way he did sales, so my answer to you is cloning your best people. If you do know a rock wow. star in the world, what you got to figure out is what makes them, why are they so successful? What makes them a rock star? And you're trying to clone or literally model that. So I actually went with Paul on some sales trips because I wanted to see what are the things he does that make him a rock star, because he was a rock star salesman. And I wrote that down. And so what you're trying to do is clone the things about the rock stars that make them a rock stars, but you can't do that until you dig deep into observing them, spending a day in the life. So even if that person, so my first question to you is, if you already own a business, do you have any rock stars? Because if you have any rock stars or MVPs on your team, go spend a day with them. I don't care that you own the company and you're the CEO. I want you to job shadow them and see what is it they do different than everyone else that is making them so good at what they do, making a rock star. And then you're sharing that. You're literally modeling that, and you're sharing that with the other people of in that department. This is what a rock star at sales looks like. This is what a rock star at HR looks like. Each of these things. If you don't have rock stars already in your company, find one in the world. You know what I did once? We actually called a woman that did. She didn't work for our company. She worked for a customer. It was one of their customers. And I asked, but she was the kind of rock star. She was in finance that I wish we had. And so I called her and I said, can we job shadow you? And she's okay. What? That's a little weird. And I said, you're a rock star at your company. We don't have someone like you at our company. Could we just spend a day in your life? We won't even speak. We'll just follow you around with a notepad. Could I send somebody to just shadow you for a day? Because we're trying to figure out what it is you do that makes you so damn good so that we know what to look for. And she's like, I guess so. And that wound up being so valuable. Sitting down and interviewing her is different because you're only going to ask her the questions on your list that you think are relevant. But we're back to the same thing. She's only going to answer the ones you asked. But it turns out you didn't ask the right questions or you would have learned way more. So by shadowing her for a day without asking any questions, just following around, we're like, oh, my God, we had no idea you did all these things because they never would have come up in conversation because we never would have asked that because we didn't know. But when we job shadowed her, we came back all excited. So clone a rock star by spending a day in their life, shadow one for the day, and you'll start to see these are the traits I need to find to hire somebody like her myself.
And I love that you say that. So it's all about intentionality from the leadership. Yep. And the reason that you say that is, you know who's the worst person at defining what makes a rock star? A rock star.
Yeah. They just do their thing.
They can't tell you how to do it. So it's like in my previous life, I was in corporate sales position. I made it to the top 1% of the company. So hopefully they didn't think I was a 10X asshole though. I knew the receptionist's name. Her name was Brenda. Anyway, shout out Brenda. And my obsession when I began the company straight out of college, my obsession was find who's the best and ask them, what do they do that makes them the best?
Awesome.
And I'm going to do what they do. And nobody could answer that. Like, nobody could tell me, oh, I do things this way. I present this way. They couldn't tell me because it was so natural to them that they couldn't articulate it.
Brian, that's why you spend a day.
Yep. That's why you spend the day.
So spend the day with them because they frequently can't. You know what that made me think of? We did this youth event this past year. We did an online event for inner city kids, basically. But we had, I spoke and a basketball player, Kyrie Irving, spoke. And you've made me think of that because one of the kids in the Q&A, we were talking about leadership and their future, but one of the kids was talking about the three-pointer that he hit when they were playing the Warriors, when he and LeBron.
For the game seven, yep.
Yes, when he hit that last-minute three-pointer. And the kids asked him that. One of the kids said, exactly what are the motions you go through to make sure that shot goes in? And Kyrie said, I have no idea. I don't think about it at all. He said, if I think about it, I'd probably mess it up. I just do what I do. And so that's what you just said. So what I was going to, if I had been answering, what I told that kid is, what you probably should do is watch 100 films of Kyrie playing and observe it because he can't explain it. He's like, man, I'm just in the flow. I don't think about it at all. He said, I just do my thing. But if you were to go watch, we went and watched Kyrie when they came here to play this past season. And he scored 60 that night. If you watched him score those 60 points, you would start to see the things he does that make him so good. But he probably wouldn't have explained it just like you said. So you've got to spend a day in the life of a rock star to see what they do much better, which is much more powerful than just asking them.
Have you ever seen a video of Tiger Woods? There's a video of Tiger Woods with like John Rahm and all the other like top, like Rory, all the top PGA players. He was hitting a bunker shot and he was showing them how he hits his bunker shot. And they were like, Tiger, explain, how do you do this? And he goes, I just quiet my hands and just quiet my hands. And then they go, can you just be normal for once? Can you explain things like a normal person? What does that mean? What the hell does that mean? So that's exactly the same thing. It's just, he's like, I just feel it. Just quiet my hands. Makes zero sense.
You just feel it. Sometimes they can explain parts of it.
Parts, not the whole picture.
Actually, it's funny because it came from the negative. I was doing this project with Michael Jordan, and somebody saw him and walked up to us and said, "Oh my God, I was there that night against Cleveland when you hit that shot at the buzzer to eliminate them from the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. Great moment." And Jordan didn't say anything. And he said, "You don't remember your game-winning shots?" And Jordan said, "No, but I can tell you in excruciating slow motion replay detail, every time I had the ball at the end of the game and I missed the shot and we lost." And so when we were walking away, I said, "Why did you miss those shots?" And he knew, right? And so there is some of it a rock star can explain. He said, "Because I didn't go vertical. I didn't get extension. I didn't get full extension, and I didn't go vertical on my jump." And he said, "I have to do those things to start out every shot if I want a chance at succeeding." And I was like, that's something to write down, right? A full extension on both arms and a vertical leap, not a side, not an angular leap. So a rock star can tell you some of the things, but like you and I just said, the truth is go follow one and watch them repeatedly, and you'll start to see the trends, the patterns.
Exactly. I want to be conscious of your time, so I want to end it with another quote that you said, be a serial entrepreneur, not a parallel entrepreneur. Talk about that.
You obviously did your homework, Brian. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Dude, why you expect me to come on this and just be like, "God, casual Jeff."
I use this analogy where I tell people to go win a gold medal at one thing. Because a lot of times entrepreneurs come to me and I've got these four businesses, and I always say, or four ideas. And I always say, great, kill three of them. Pick the one in your heart that you can crush and focus all your energy on that. And I tell them the example that earlier on at the beginning of the internet, I used to talk to Bezos somewhat frequently when the internet started. And people forget that for all those years, he only sold books. And I remember him saying to me one day, "I just want to be the best damn bookseller on the planet. Then I'll figure out where to go next." And Tony Hsieh telling me one day at Zappos, "I just want to be the best damn shoe seller on the planet." So I noticed that the companies that hit massive success did so by becoming the best damn something on the planet before they try to do 15 other things. And so there are people that have four multiple sources. I've heard that over and over again, multiple sources of income.
Yeah.
And those people have a nice life, and that's good. A nice life is worth it. But that's not the question we're answering. They're saying the people that turned $1 million companies into $1 billion companies, what did they do differently? And guess what? Not one of them had multiple sources of income. Bezos built books, sold books, and created Amazon. Tony Hsieh did that. Our own company, Priceline.com, Booking.com, sold hotel rooms, not cruises, not travel insurance, not luggage. One product, hotel rooms. So that's your gold medal product. The thing that you can category crush and do really well at. And the more companies I observed, the more I noticed that the people that focused on instead of dividing your every dollar into four quarters, that you're putting on four different businesses, you're putting your team divided into four teams to run four businesses or four products, right? Your personal headspace is divided four ways. What if you took all of that and you put your entire team and your entire budget on books because you knew you could crush it? That is what Bezos did. For 7 years, you could not buy anything but a book because he said, "I'm going to win a gold medal at books first before I sell anything else." That's the part people miss. That sticking to one thing, and I used to tell people that because people said, "Man, you launched a music company and later a film company and you did the travel company." And I always tell them not at the same time. When we were doing travel, Brian, if you called me and said, "Hey, Jeff, I have an idea," I would have said, "Brian, if you want to talk to me about how to get more butts and beds and hotel rooms, great. If it's anything else, call me next year." Then later, we were doing music tours. And if you called me, I would have said, "Dude, unless you're going to help me sell out Friday night's concert, call me next year." Staying focused. By the way, Brian, there is a really nice side benefit to that. I have failed multiple times, but I fail really fast when I fail. And the reason you fail really fast is because you're all in on your idea. And so you're going to find out way quicker that it's not working than you are if you're only putting a fourth of your time every week into that thing because you've got three other businesses. So when you fail fast. But when you succeed at a much faster rate as well. So that, by the way, I learned a little bit of that one day talking to Richard Branson. Because all the Virgin companies. And Richard said, whoa, time out. He said, when I launched Virgin Records, he said, that's all I did. And then he said, each time he would sell the company or bring in a new CEO and say, don't call me, I don't work here anymore. When he launched Virgin Mobile, the phone company, that's all he did. And then he left and he actually hired one of our Priceline guys to run Virgin Mobile. They sold it to Sprint. And then he launched Virgin Galactic. He said, I built a lot of companies, but I only ever ran one at a time. And so what I'm saying is, everybody I studied that achieved big success did so by being serial and not parallel. And I'm not saying you might not be able to do it, but I'm saying I think your odds are significantly greater if you pick the thing you're best at and go all in at that. I use the gold medal analogy because you've never heard of an Olympic athlete win a gold medal in swimming, then a gold medal in track and field, and then a gold medal on the basketball team. It'll never happen because it's so damn hard to win a gold medal at anything that if you're a swimmer, you're a swimmer. And so that's why I use that analogy. If you want to win a gold medal at swimming, you ain't doing anything but swimming for a lot of years. That's how people achieve big success. Once you're done, once you hit that gold medal level, then you can start to add new products, new services, you can grow. But the question you and I are answering is, how do I get to that level? And you get to that level by intense focus.
You earn the right. You earn the right to diversify.
Yep, you got it.
Love it. What is, to finish, the closing question? You are, if you go on your website, you're a part of 574 different charitable organizations, trusts that you've started, different ways that you've impacted people. That's fantastic. And that's something that people look for in people that have economic success. Out of all of those charitable trusts and all those things and all the philanthropy that you've done, can you think of one specific organization or one specific thing or event or moment that you did that was the most impactful for you so far?
Yeah, I'm going to give you two, though, even though you said one.
That's okay.
Because they're equal. We have our own youth charity, nice. World Youth Horizons, and the GoBundance people have actually gone on and donated, and we really appreciate that. It's at worldyouthhorizons.com. We, for example, we're finishing an orphanage that we're building in Uganda, and to watch all these abandoned kids, most of them lost their parents to the civil war violence. All their parents were killed. These kids were just basically laying on the ground, no homes, no clothes, no shoes, no beds, no food, no nothing, no school when we met them. And now they have clothes, they have shoes. We bought land. We built a pig farm, a goat farm. We have chickens, a rabbit farm. They're growing corn and beans on their land. They feed themselves. And we're finishing their house. So they'll have electricity and running water and beds for the first showers, toilets for the first time in their life, and they're all in school. They have books, they have clothes for school, they have backpacks, they have lunch at school. Our team at World Youth Horizons did all that. And to see these children today when we do video calls, their life now versus where they were when we met them, it makes every night you ever stayed up late working on your business worth it. Wow. Because you can't get there until you get there by running profitable businesses that enable you to be able to help people like that. The other one I mentioned is, we have an organization that I still chair called the Global Entrepreneurship Network, where we set out to help anybody anywhere start and scale business, to help people achieve freedom through economic independence. And the proud moment was that we are now on the ground in 200 countries. And to reach that milestone with our team is such an, I still look at it, I still can't believe we've done this. So we work with people in 200 countries that are trying to make their lives better and the lives around them better. And I'm so immensely proud of the team that we've been able to reach people all over the planet and help them make things around them better. And the stories of what they create are just heartwarming. Thank you for asking that. And thanks for having me today.
I appreciate it, my friend. And I'll leave it with this. Like I tell people listening to this podcast, obviously have a good relationship with wealth, but the general public has a poor sentiment. And what I will always say is it really comes down to two things. Like you have good people making money, you have bad people making money. It is our moral obligation as good people to make as much money as humanly possible to be one of the good guys. Because if we just stop and we say, oh, this isn't moral anymore to pursue higher levels of wealth, the bad guys are still going to do it.
Right. That money's going somewhere.
That money's going somewhere. It's going to the African diamond mine or the oil. Let's be one of the good guys. And that's what you can do. Instead of donating $5, which is still fantastic, to buy somebody a loaf of bread, you can build a freaking village. So, Jeff, thank you for the masterclass today. Thank you for everything that you've done. Thank you for the impact. And thank you for the conversation, brother.
All right, my friend, thanks for having me. And I can't wait to see your feed from your epic odyssey around the world.
Oh, man, absolutely. It's going to be a freaking blast. And I can do it because of this. This is going to be, you're going to be my last interview. You're popping out next Tuesday. Yes, next Tuesday. So it's going to be right before I hop on a plane, hopefully on time. And then you'll be my last United States interview. After this, right. It's going to be in Greece, baby. So
have fun and keep me posted. It.
Oh, thanks, I will. Man. Thank you, all sir. Right. This has been Brian and Jeff Hoffman with The Action Academy signing off.
You've been listening to The Action Academy podcast, helping you to choose what you want, with who you want, when you want.
You've been given the gift of freedom. Don't turn your back on that.
We hope you've enjoyed the show, and we hope you've gotten some practical and useful information. Make sure to like, rate, and review the show. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hook up with us on social media. Remember, financial independence is freedom.
The flags of freedom fly. Freedom fly.